Hello, and welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship's virtual Sunday service for August 23rd, 2020. We are also affectionately known as WOOF. I am Brad Hewitt, and I use the pronouns he, him, and his. And it is my joy to serve as your lay leader today. I extend the most heartfelt of welcomes to you and would like to open with the poem Gathering in Our Own Spaces by Jeff May, found on the UU Worship web app. Come, gather, not into common space, sharing a physical closeness we long for, precluded by wise choice, but come, gather into this common time and common space. We need to be together. We yearn for connection. We hunger for the familiar faces of friends, the sound of shared voices, proclaiming who we are, where we are going. That which resonates with our hopes, our dreams, our values. Come, gather. We are here, in this space made of spaces, and we share our becoming in this moment. For those of you who receive our email service announcements, you will see an order of service document attached, which also lists upcoming events. In the body of the email, you will also see the link to our after-service virtual coffee hour. I hope you'll join us there live at 11:30 to check in with each other, share joys and sorrows, and engage with today's speaker. And now I light the chalice, symbol of our shared and hopeful faith.
It matters what we believe. Some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged. Other beliefs are expansive and lead the way into wider and deeper sympathies. Some beliefs are like shadows, clouding children's days with fears of unknown calamities. Other beliefs are like sunshine, blessing children with the warmth of happiness. Some beliefs are divisive, separating the saved from the unsaved, friends from enemies. Other beliefs are bonds in a world community, where sincere differences beautify the pattern. Some beliefs are like blinders, shutting off the power to choose one's own direction. Other beliefs are like gateways, opening wide vistas for exploration. Some beliefs weaken a person's selfhood. They blight the growth of resourcefulness. Other beliefs nurture self-confidence and enrich the feeling of personal worth. Some beliefs are rigid, like the body of death, impotent in a changing world. Other beliefs are pliable, like the young sapling, ever growing with the upward thrust of life. Sophia Lyon Foss.
WOOF member Howard Baldwin comes from a long line of UUs, but has focused on being a committed UU for the last 20 years. He joined WOOF after moving to Portland 2 years ago in search of more trees and more water. We have both. He is a retired writer and lives in Lake Oswego with his wife and 3 cats.
Thanks, Brad. Good morning. We've just been through a very political week, and we're going to embark on another one. It's purely coincidental that we scheduled this sermon for the weekend between the political conventions, but we have. If you're sick of politics, turn off the computer and go do something else. But otherwise, I'm going to talk about my life as a Republican before I became a UU. You know the joke. If you're not a liberal by the time you're 20, you have no heart. And if you're not a conservative, by the time you're 40, you have no brain. I did that backwards. When I turned 18, I registered as a Republican. I broke my poor mother's heart. I was a Republican through the second Bush administration, though I did have a Republicans for Kerry bumper sticker on my car. I am not, I'm happy to say, a Republican anymore. I am a registered Democrat, and the Unitarian Universalists had a lot to do with that. Looking back, if there's anyone unlikelier to be a Republican, it was me. People ask, what's in a name? Well, the names in my family point to being very, very liberal. Let's start with my mother. She was born Louise Michelle Swire in Albany, New York in 1921. That's right. From the time she was 7 until she was 11, my mother lived across town from Governor Franklin Delano Roosevelt. But if you know your socialist history, you know that Louise Michelle was a famous socialist and anarchist in France. My grandfather was a Russian socialist who fled the country prior to the Russian Revolution, 2 steps ahead of the Cossacks, as family lore would have it. He named my mother after Louise Michel. He maintained his socialist tendencies when he arrived in America and supposedly knew anarchist Emma Goldman personally. Then there's my father. My father was born Norman Burton Levy in Port Chester, New York in 1920. Family lore has it that when my father applied to college in 1936, he was rejected. He was a good student, though, and when he asked a teacher why he'd been rejected, the teacher suggested that the college had already filled its Jewish quota. In order to deflect anti-Semitism, my father changed his name. As a youth, he had met, befriended, and corresponded with Roger Baldwin, one of the founders of the American Civil Liberties Union. That's why he legally changed his surname to Baldwin. My given name is Howard Roger Baldwin. And if you don't think it was weird being a Republican named after one of the founders of the ACLU, you're wrong. So how did someone with that upbringing end up voting for Reagan, the Bushes, Bruce Hershenson, Pete Wilson, and other names that will live in infamy in California and national politics? It's like this. I believed, and still believe, in the individual. I believe in anyone's ability to achieve the American dream. I grew up in Palo Alto, California, in a neighborhood of about 40 houses. It was nestled between a meandering creek, an orchard, and a Southern Pacific spur line. In this little neighborhood, there were 2 black families. In one, the father was a dentist. The other black family owned the senior citizen's home next to us. We called it a rest home in those days. I suspect that they were richer than we were. I didn't see obstacles for minorities. I saw opportunities. When it came to education, there were community colleges and scholarships. As Silicon Valley boomed, the idea of not being able to find a job seemed far-fetched. Like a good Republican, I also believed in the idea of limited government, that Washington should keep its nose out of people's lives. There were 3 major areas where I believed the government should keep its nose out of: wombs, wallets, and bedrooms. And that, as I'm sure you can guess, is where my resolve started to crumble. Let's talk about wombs. Republicans believe that government should not restrict individual liberties, not when it comes to guns, not when it comes to wearing a mask, and so on. But there's this exception. They don't believe women have the right to decide what to do with their bodies. Now, I really don't have a say in this because I wasn't issued a uterus. I've heard enough horror stories, even within my immediate family, to know that it can actually be pro-life to terminate a child whose life will be without hope. Let's talk about wallets. You know this argument. I made the money. I get to keep it. Unfortunately, the older I got, and the more that I wrote about international business and globalization, the more I realized what government contributed to the making of those fortunes. You may have manufactured the goods, but you shipped them on asphalt the government poured and waterways the government maintained, and through airports built with tax dollars. You may have invented the process, but it was the U.S. Patent Office and the Securities and Exchange Commission that protected your investment, kept it free from theft, corruption, and whatever. You don't like paying taxes? No problem. Go start your business in India or China or Russia or Brazil or any of those booming young economies and see how much protection you get from the people who want to steal your idea. And finally, let's talk about bedrooms. I had to look this up because I'm not a big Bible thumper. But the Bible apparently does have a couple of passages that speak against homosexuality. Apparently Romans 1:26 and 1:27, although they're not really very straightforward. However, the Bible also speaks against divorce and adultery. Our last four Republican presidents have had seven wives between them. So you do the math on that. Sorry, but the Bible is not a buffet where you get to dig into what you want and leave the rest. As you might have already gathered, hypocrisy is what finally killed my feelings for the Republican Party. I've never been one for hypocrisy, and that seems to be the one thing that the Republicans are really good at. For example, I have a list. Let's execute people, but let's not kill babies. Let's reduce taxes, but not farm subsidies or corporate tax deductions. Let's vilify the LGBT community, but let's also elect a president with the morals of a stray dog in heat. Let's not increase the deficit, except if it means doing so to cut taxes on the rich. Let's bail corporations out, even though they've spent the last few boom years buying back their own stock and boosting their CEO's compensation. The list goes on. And that's just the general attitude of Republicans. It's not difficult to find specific examples of Republican hypocrisy. These are my favorites, and you can Google any of these. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is against debt-free college, even as he talks about his dad putting himself through college on the GI Bill. Former Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney talks about how we shouldn't tax the rich so they can invest in the American economy. But where did he put his money? In offshore tax shelters in the Cayman Islands and Switzerland. And former House Speaker Paul Ryan, when he was running for vice president with Romney, blamed Barack Obama for the shutdown of a General Motors plant in Janesville, Wisconsin. But the plant actually closed under President George W. Bush. Ryan actually asked for federal funding to save the plant. I especially like that one because I got it from Fox News' website. So which came first, becoming a UU or becoming enlightened? I have to admit I was becoming enlightened before I became a UU. I went looking for the warmth of a religious community, but I started with the Unitarians because my father had attended the UU church in Palo Alto for a while. Roger Baldwin was also a Unitarian. My father became involved with the UUs in the 1960s. The state legislature had passed a law that essentially legalized redlining in neighborhoods, giving homeowners the right not to sell to minorities. My father, even though he was a realtor and it could have affected his livelihood, picketed against that law, and I believe he met several UUs during those protests. In 1966, he also tried to get a Japanese restaurateur admitted to the Elks Club in Palo Alto when it was an all-white institution. He showed me the application form, which actually said, "Is the applicant a member of the Caucasian race?" He failed in this endeavor and quit the Elks, a service organization in which he'd been quite active. It took me a long time to seek out a religious organization because I never liked the dogma I saw in Christianity. But at the UU Church in Sunnyvale, back in California, I found what I was looking for. It was clearly a bunch of rabble-rousing liberals. I didn't agree with all of them, but I loved their passion, and I learned from it. In fact, there was a woman named Betty, whom I especially liked. Betty could only be described as a raging granny, gray hair, passionate, as lefty as they come. Interestingly, one of the other members once gave me insight into UU politics, using Betty as an example. At General Assembly, I was told, Betty is a moderate. But what struck me most about UUs is that they believed in the teachings of Jesus without believing that Jesus was divine. I liked that, and I learned a lot. Listening to the sermons and my fellow UUs, I learned or relearned what Nick Carraway's dad had said in The Great Gatsby. Not everybody had all the advantages that you did. I learned that it wasn't enough to have the opportunity to go to college because not everyone had the family structure that encourages or believes in the ability to go to college. I came to realize that the adage, it's not what you know, it's who you know, was really true. It was hard for people who started out on lower socioeconomic rungs to climb higher on the ladder without connections. I came to believe that we need a strong government to do collectively what people or even corporations can't do individually. Build cities, deploy infrastructure, both real and virtual, protect human rights, balance the baser instincts of capitalism. I still believe that there are horrible examples of how the public sector wastes money, but I've come to believe that we know more about this because we demand transparency of government. Anybody who's ever worked in the private sector has seen just as egregious wastes of money, but they're easier to hide from view. I especially remember one day in particular, during my journey from being a conservative to being a liberal, our minister in Sunnyvale took a moment to recognize the passing of Attorney General Elliot Richardson, who resigned rather than fire Watergate Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox. I told our minister after the service, until you said that, I wasn't sure that the UUs let Republicans in. And the minister said, of course we do. How else are we going to change them? And change I did. I knew I was pretty much way far away from being a Republican when I realized in 2016 that I agreed with all five of Bernie Sanders' campaign pillars. And as time has gone on, I've come to question conservative principles more and more. I do not understand this, I've got mine, tough if you can't get yours, philosophy that the Republicans are espousing. They talk a lot about making America great again, but I don't see that happening. There was a letter to the editor in the Portland Oregonian last week from a suburban housewife warning Democrats not to pigeonhole her as a Biden supporter. She vehemently wrote, I believe the primary function of government is to provide safety and security, maintain law and order, protect civil society, and get out of the way of individual liberty. Her letter horrified me. Safety and security for whom? Not for George Floyd or Breonna Taylor. Maintain law and order for whom? For only people who look like her and have the resources to take care of themselves, but not those who are struggling or people who freely assemble to shine a light on injustice? Civil society for whom? The civil society she supports says to hell with others' health because they don't want to wear a mask in the middle of a pandemic. The last word of the last line of the Pledge of Allegiance, with liberty and justice for all, does not have an asterisk next to it, as much as the Republican Party seems to want to put one there. On the other hand, I really don't want to represent Republicans as the other, as some sort of bastion of evil. Some of my best friends are Republicans. Some of them have gone through epiphanies like me. One of them actually set up contributions to Elizabeth Warren's presidential campaign. But another friend of mine, a supporter of the president, grew up in rural Colorado. His high school friends probably stayed there and remained farmers. He truly is a paragon of the American dream. He used a scholarship from Coors to go to Stanford, study physics, and eventually become a CEO of a technology company. I know him to have a heart of gold for his friends because there was a difficult time in my life when he was as strong a support for me as he is now of the president. I don't understand it, especially since this friend's father worked for the county his whole career. But he is my friend. I guess in order to be an ex-Republican, you have to go through being a Republican, so I have to believe there's some hope for him. In fact, I have to believe that there's some hope for all of us. Let me wrap up by telling you about the America I grew up in and the America that being a UU showed me. I look at America as a commonwealth. People seem to have forgotten the definition of that word. It means a community founded and maintained for the common good. It's like Jimmy Stewart said in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, "I wouldn't give you 2 cents for all your fancy rules if behind them they didn't have a little bit of plain, ordinary, everyday kindness and a little looking out for the other fellow too." As I became more committed to being a UU, I started thinking about the philosophy of what government does right. I crafted something that I call the vulnerability principle. It's very simple. Why do we give pedestrians the right of way in a crosswalk? Why is the speed limit 25 miles an hour around schools? Why do we set aside parking for the handicapped? Why did we enact programs such as Social Security and Medicare? Because America, as a society, as a culture, has made a solemn commitment to protecting the most vulnerable among us at exactly the moment they're most vulnerable. I think about the vulnerability principle, and then I think about the principles my former party promotes. Every man for himself. That's not going to make America great again. As a matter of fact, it's as anti-American a sentiment as I've ever heard in my lifetime. And I only learned that when I became a UU. Thank you.
Strange and foolish walls. The years of all of us are short, our lives precarious. Our days and nights go hurrying on, and there is scarcely time to do the little we might. Yet, we find time for bitterness, for petty treason and evasion. What can we do to stretch our hearts enough to lose their littleness? Here we are, all of us, all upon this planet, bound together in a common destiny, living our lives between the briefness of the daylight and the dark. Kindred in this, each lighted by the same precarious, flickering flame of life, how does it happen that we are not kindred in all things else? How strange and foolish are these walls of separation that divide us. A. Powell Davies. As we extinguish the chalice and close our time together in this moment, let us carry within the warm glow of its flame and all that it stands for as we make our way along our path the coming week. May we meet again in a spirit of peace, compassion, and love.